You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. I'm Larry Mantle. Earlier today, our critics were praising the science fiction mystery The Vast of Night. It's available to stream on Amazon Prime. It's the directorial debut for Andrew Patterson. He made the film with a tiny budget and no formal film school education. But the end result has critics and others lauding the film as an achievement a veteran director would be proud of. KPCC's John Horn sat down with the director, Patterson, this week, and he asked him where he learned to make movies.
The short answer is I was able to work in short form with cameras. And I mean, you know, you get to where you put enough people on camera for anything, short documentaries, promotional pieces, and so on. And if you're doing that all the same time you're watching, you know, 200 or 300 movies a year, those two things, I think, kind of take care of themselves. You have a craft that you're actually working very hard on, sometimes making 50 to 100 individual pieces of short form media a year. And then at the same time, every single day, you're kind of settling down with great filmmakers and just getting to watch what they do.
One of the things that is remarkable about your film from where I sit is your hero, or one of your heroes, Everett, is a radio host. We don't see a lot of radio hosts with centerpiece roles in movies. How did you decide about the jobs that your lead characters, Everett and Faye, have? One's a radio host, one works a switchboard. What do those occupations serve in terms of their ability to tell this story through heard conversations?
Early on in our research for the script, we stumbled across kind of what we learned was a very, especially in UFO communities, a very infamous incident from Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, called the Kecksburg Incident, where a radio DJ starts getting calls from people all over Pennsylvania, rural Pennsylvania, that something had fallen out of the sky and had crashed into some, you know, trees and broken some branches. And then people went out and looked at it, and it was this large, you know, acorn-shaped thing about the size of a Volkswagen Bug. And it's highly documented. And a lot of it was documented by this jock, this late 50s, early 60s DJ. And man, that was a key to open up a really unique angle on a movie that I hadn't seen yet, where you kind of got locked into a place with a guy that had access to these phone calls, but couldn't necessarily just run off and decide to leave the station. And then the other occupation is a switchboard operator, which is, that makes her sort of, you know, in her role, when you sit down at the switchboard and you're the only one working, you're the one that connects everybody. And you're the one that has all the control over any call being made. And it also puts her in a position where she could start to do research right there from her very much locked in position. And she could start making calls to figure out what was going on when a new sound comes through the radio and the switchboard. She can start making calls right there. And that was an exciting, dramatic place to be able to position a movie from.
One of the things that you do in the film is you kind of call attention to the genre of it by having this Twilight Zone-like framing device. It's called Paradox Theater. And you found somebody, for people who might remember, who sounds a little bit like Rod Serling. Tell me about that framing device and what it means in terms of what the audience is to assume about the story they're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the framing device was, you know, written on page one, that you would see this old TV, and inside the old TV you'd see an old TV show. And the way that the actors say their lines back and forth feels old. It feels like acting styles of the 50s and 40s, and then you push in, and then the black and white image on the TV melts away and it becomes color, and people hopefully start acting and talking a little bit more like what real life sounds like, both now and in 1958. And the game plan for that was to say, we understand that what you're about to see in terms of the plot is not necessarily breaking any ground. We know you've seen pictures like this. We know you've seen lights blinking on and off in people's homes and public spaces. And we know that weird noises, you know, have been used to come through the sound waves. And we know that you're familiar with this, but we think we have a new way to come at it. But we do want you to know that we're aware of our influences here. And we're aware of the history that led up to us taking a crack at this story. And so it's a little bit of a wink to say, we're with you. We know what we're doing here. And we still think we have something to add to the conversation.
We're talking with filmmaker Andrew Patterson about his film, The Vast of Night. I want to ask you about your screenplay that was written by you and James Montague and Craig Sanger. There are references to what the future might hold. The story unfolds in the 50s. Autonomous cars might exist. Something like Elon Musk's vacuum tube travel might exist, but there's no way there's going to be cell phones. Tell us a little bit about what you were making fun of and what this frame, what this time period allowed you to do in terms of looking at how people saw the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I remember being probably a 12-year-old, and my granddad, who was born in 1931, had told me about an experiment in 1956 or 57 done in Lincoln, Nebraska, where cars, full-size cars, were hooked up to radios, and they had a mile-long track, and they were all autonomous. And they moved together like a school of fish, and there was no, you wouldn't have to brake, and you wouldn't have to avoid anything. You could drive in the rain, because it didn't matter, you know, if you could see or not. And he worked in the auto parts industry, and he got annoyed that that never came about. And, you know, he's telling me this story in the late 90s, probably, or mid 90s. And he had theories about why it didn't occur. And I loved that notion that you could tell stories about the future from the past. And I love storytelling. I think you can sit in a theater and listen to people tell great stories. I think you can do it on radio. I think you can do it in books and graphic novels and radio podcasts in every format. And so in the beginning of the movie, we let our characters sort of dream. And I let the lead character played by Sierra, who plays Faye, get to tell these stories about the future will look like this. Telephones will look like this. Transportation will look like this. And they get to dream. And it's fun to get to play with people's perceptions of what would have been the future, you know, 60 plus years ago, and kind of get to see how things went one way when they thought they were going to go one way and maybe didn't go another way.
This is a period film, and its making is almost a period film. I think you wrote it in the summer of 2015. You filmed it in 2016. It premieres at the Slamdance Film Festival in early 2019, the Toronto Film Festival later that year, and now it's finally coming out. You played in a handful of drive-ins. You didn't get your theatrical release. How strange has this past 4 or 5 years been in bringing this movie out? Because even though movies take a long time, this one seems to have, you know, its own kind of shelf life.
Yeah, that's amazing how well you know our timeline. Because I think people just, you know, in most productions, you get them done. You take a month or two or three to do, you know, your edit and so on. Your VFX might take longer if you have that. And then 6 to 8 months later at the most, usually less than a year, you're out. And we were so small that we ran through all of our money on the budget, on the production. And so most of our post-production just needed to be pushed along slowly as we got the budget to do a little bit more and so on. And then we had a whole year where we were not accepted by any film festivals at all. Like the entire calendar year of 2018 was 18 film festival rejections. And then at the end of that year, we got to one that the festival that accepted us, that played it, was Slamdance. And their bylaws and everything that they stand for is that they will watch your movie all the way through. Nobody will just stop it after 5 or 10 minutes and make a call about it. They watch it with two different people. And they've netted some of the most incredible alumni. I mean, they played Bong Joon-ho's first feature. They played Chris Nolan's first feature. They played the Russo brothers' first feature. And just that alone, if that was the only three alumni you had, you would have this incredible festival. So they watched it and they liked it and they let us in. And then ever since, we've just sort of been on this year-long tour with the movie.
KPECC's John Horn interviewing first-time director Andrew Patterson. His debut, The Vast of Night, is streaming now on Amazon Prime. Great to have you with us, as always, on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll be back with you Monday morning at 10 on Air Talk.